Welcome to episode 81 of Little Cabin Knits. Spring is in the air somewhere. Little Cabin Knits, where every stitch tells a story. Join me, Emily, your guide through the cozy world of knitting, mental health, and the wonders of life in the untamed beauty of Alaska. As we embark on this journey together, we'll weave together the threads of my new mama adventure, embracing the diversity of all people and walks of life, and the tranquil essence of Huga. I'm not just your host, I'm a passionate knitter, crocheter, crafter, mental health therapist, ready to share the warmth of Alaska and the joys of crafting with you. Let's knit our way through life's wild adventures, one stitch at a time. This week's episode contains On the Couch, On the Shelf, Storing Up, In the Basket, Roaming and Foraging, Homesteading, and Around the Campfire. Thank you for joining me, my friends, and let's talk about knitting and crocheting.
You got it. Behind you on the floor. Okay, shake your hand. Anxiety by the sounds of things.
Yeah. What are you building?
Do you want me to come build with you? I thought you were building with Daddy. Oh, you're going to take my blanket off me? Yeah? Okay, I'm coming. Pulling me off the couch, okay. I was just resting, but... No. Oh, yeah, Bubba's under there.
The doggy. Don't forget about the doggy. It's the doggy.
You gonna come up and say hi to the doggy? Okay. Yes.
On the Shelf. Well, this month I've been pretty busy. I've finished 4 projects, but you'll see that within at least 2 of the projects, I created multiple of each project. So honestly, it's more like, okay, 4 + 6 = 10. It's like I finished 18 things this month. So we'll see. Well, speaking of multiple things within one project, the first thing I did was I created 8 Easter rattle eggs out of crochet for my son Jimmy for his Easter basket, because we don't give him candy, so he gets little knickknacks and toys. And so I thought, oh, he loves the spheres that I made for him, the balls that have rattles in them. Earlier this last year, in 2023, I designed those balls and then stuffed them and put a rattle ball inside, which, by the way, you can buy a big quantity of rattles on Amazon pretty darn cheap. Let me know if you want the link to that, and I'll give it to you guys. So I have lots of those rattles left, and so I just decided that since he loves the rattle of the balls, and he loves balls anyway, I would create him some Easter eggs. And then I thought, oh, well, why don't I create them in the colors of the rainbow? And then I got going on it, and I went to Joann's and used my coupons and got some more Red Heart Super Saver, and I couldn't resist doing a few extra colors in the rainbow. So we ended up with 8. And the colors I used was red, orange, which I didn't think I would like, but I really like that bright orange. I'm not going to sit there and crochet Mr. Radio up a bright orange hat out of the Red Heart Super Saver, but I actually really liked it as far as the Easter egg goes, and I think it'd be fun to make him some other toys, like an orange dinosaur or something like that. I think that would be really fun. Anyway, back to the colors that I used. Red, orange, yellow, green, a dark blue, and then I added in a light blue, purple, and then I added in a pink for good measure. Because I had it, and I could, and I was having fun. And I think I kept notes on how I crocheted up these Easter eggs. I'm not positive, but I did time myself. It took me about 40 minutes per Easter egg from start to finish. So 8 times 40, that's like, I don't know, 5 hours to create my son a really fun Easter. So we've got his Easter basket going, and it's up on a shelf, and I've just put all the Easter eggs in there. And then I did go to Target, and I got him a few other little doodads to put in to his basket as well. And I don't know, maybe I'll let him have sugar. I'm not really sure, but you know, we have a rule in my house that he's not supposed to have sugar until the age of 2. We've kind of been a little lax on that the last month. But he turns 2 in March. I mean, May. So it's not too far out, I guess. I'm just trying to justify it, my friends. But I started this project. Oh, and I used a crochet hook size H for this. And I started these on March 6th, and I finished all 8 of these on March 9th. The next thing I finished was my compassion crochet for the month of March. And when we went to Walmart, I had heard tell that Walmart is the only one that carries this. And I believe it's true because I couldn't find them at Walmart at Michael's or at Joann's. But Red Heart has come out with speckled yarn. I don't know how recently they came out with it, but they came out with some speckled yarn for Red Heart Super Saver worsted weight. Could be in different weights too, but I have no idea. I mean, isn't Red Heart Super Saver only in worsted? I think so. But I thought it sounded really fun. So when we went to Walmart, I just kind of convinced my husband that we'd go over to the yarn section and take a look. And my goodness, they've got a lot of yarn at Walmart. And I did indeed find the speckled yarns. I don't know the colorway names. I've already stashed them away, and I forgot to get the colorway names before I stashed them away. But they're super cute. There's a blue base with speckles on it, rainbow speckles, a pink base with rainbow speckles, and a white base with rainbow speckles. And so with that, I created, on March 9th, I crocheted myself up a little basket out of Red Heart Super Saver in the red, and Jimmy gave that to a random stranger that we came across when we were out and about that day, and that person really loved it. Apparently they said they were going to give it to their grandson, which was great. But it was such a success that I just decided, hey, why don't I crochet up a bunch more of these little baskets? And my intent was to give them all to his playmates at nursery during church, so I went ahead and crocheted up 5 more out of the speckled yarn for his playmates. But then I got sick and we didn't go to church, and then we had some friends come over and they had little kids with them, and so I was like, oh well, I mean, I crocheted these baskets up and they're pretty easy, so if they want them, they can have them. And so we ended up giving them to the little kids, and they just played with the baskets the whole time, which I find fascinating. Like, the things that little kids are like enjoy playing with is the simplest things. Oftentimes I find that, especially with Jimmy, the more complicated the toy, the less he plays with it. So things like his blocks or his, I think they're called Duplos or something like that. They're like huge Legos for little toddlers. He loves those things. But the bigger, more complicated toys, like his toy toolbox, he doesn't really play with. So these kids played with their baskets and like put them on each other's heads and everything for like an hour, I think. So I, in the end, total, I made 6 tidbit baskets, and I was designing these on my own again, and I know that I wrote up my notes on that. Does this then translate that I will become a crochet designer and be putting out little things like this? Probably not. But if people are interested, I will put out the basket and the Easter eggs. It's probably too late now since Easter is this Sunday. So it's probably too late for people to utilize that pattern. But, you know, if you'd like, I can put out these 2 patterns as well. But they were just super fun, really easy, and I got my Compassion Crochet knit project done for the month, and it made me really happy. I still have the goal of making these for his nursery mates. Now, I'm still counting these, even though I have somebody in mind for these baskets for the next month, I'm still counting them as my compassion crochets because I just feel, it just feels right to count them in that category. Like, it's sort of like it's like my charity work, but it's not my charity work. I don't know how to explain it. But I also have in mind crocheting up a plant for somebody else, some random person. Because I don't know, crocheting up a plant just sounds fun to me right now. I guess it's maybe spring. So I might do that too as part of the month of April. But I started these tidbit baskets on March 9th, and I finished them on March 9th because they were super fast. I think each one took me 20 minutes. The next thing that I finished is something super exciting. So I mentioned it last episode, I was able to test knit the Dixie Creek Cowl by Emily Clausen or Salt City Knits. I was in the test group for this. I had so much fun knitting this up. And the yarn I used is another budget saver. It is the Karen Blossom Cake in the Tropical Blooms colorway from Michaels. And I believe, so there's over 800 yards in this Karen Cake. I used exactly half of the skein to make this cowl. So that means, let me just calculate this out here. I've got the tag right here. All right, so it says there's 8 ounces, 227 grams, and 481 yards, and I used exactly half of it. So that means I used about 240 yards. Now, Emily has put this out as a one cake or one skein cowl. And I would say that to be on the safe side, you know, if you're using DK weight yarn, definitely have an extra cake out because you're going to need to increase the size of the neck opening in order to make this cowl work if you're using DK. If you're using worsted, and you're using like hand-dyed yarn, you'll probably want to have an extra skein for the finishing. Now, if you're using a budget saver yarn like I did, you're golden. Like use any of the Lion brand or Karen cakes or what do they call it? The mandala cakes. I don't remember what those are called, but it's from Lion brand, right? Yeah. And they're super fun. I have gotten so many compliments on this cowl, and it is for a gift for my sister for her birthday in April, and I'm so grateful that I have this done. It is so beautiful. I did the picot edging on my cowl differently because the yarn I used, yes, it's a 4-weight worsted weight yarn, but I think maybe because of the acrylic, it's a little bit stiffer. So in the pattern, the picot bind off was the way it was written. It looked too awkward when I did it 2 patterns. So I decreased the picot binding by each picot has 1 less stitch than what's in the pattern. And I think it looks absolutely wonderful and beautiful. And so that's my only alteration of this entire pattern. The lace work is, after you get about halfway through the first lace chart, you've got it memorized. And same with like the garter stitch and the increases and the decreases, and it's very fascinating. I haven't knit a cowgirl type cowl in a long time, so I had actually forgotten about how the construction was, and it was really fun to have this reminder that in essence you're knitting a miniature shawl and then joining it close to the end to make it into a cowl. It's so fascinating, the things that we come up with, the things that we are able to do, to design and construct with knitting and crochet. It just boggles my mind so many times. I'm so impressed with people and, yeah, just the way we utilize things. I love it. So I started this on March 2nd and I finished it on March 10th. So that was a really fast knit. Really enjoyed that. And I did use a US size 6 needle for this. And the last thing I finished was the plant holder by Ashley Connessy. This, you can pay for the pattern on Ravelry for something like $5, but you can also, there's a link in the Ravelry pattern page to go to her website and you get the pattern for free. You just have to deal with the ads. I'm totally fine with that. Especially now knowing that they get paid for however long the duration that somebody stays on their website and on a certain page and an ad is up and in their face. Like the reader's face, the more money the designer gets, she's getting paid either way. So I just was like, okay, I'll just do the free pattern. I'm fine with that. But this was a super fun crochet project. I used Lilies and Cream Solid in the Jade Mist colorway. And this is the yarn that I picked up a cone of from Michaels to crochet up the dishcloths for the kitchen. I've got Jade Mist and White, and that's the two that I'm going to use for the kitchen. But we recently cleaned out our dining room, and I, you know, some of the plants I just felt needed more sunshine, and we don't have a place that we can hang up, set the plants so they can get more sunshine. So the next option would be, oh, they need to hang from the ceiling close to the windows. So how to accomplish that? Well, you can do macrame and macrame yourself up some hanging pot holders or whatever, plant holders. There we go. That's the word. Or I looked it up and using sugars and cream or any 100% cotton worsted weight works to also crochet up some plant holders. So that's what I did. I used this plant holder. I really liked the way this came out. My sister was just here with her daughter. They took Jimmy for the afternoon to give me some time to rest or record my podcast. And she loved my plant holder, which makes me wonder if I shouldn't crochet her up a few because she's got a lot of plants in her home and they also don't have a place to put them either. But for now, I'm focusing on finishing up these. And this was meant to be probably more a summer project, but due to the cleaning out of the dining room, the impetus to get this going was really on me. And so I sat down, found a pattern that I thought would work best. Mind you, if you are going to do this, you do need to measure your pots that your plants are in well, and then make sure whatever pattern you're using will work for that pot. The pot that I used was the size, it's 3.5 inches wide at the bottom and 5 inches at the top going up, but it does taper outward. And that's what this pattern was designed for. However, I noted that when I finished with what the design called for, the pot holder was actually still too short. It didn't actually come up close to the lip of the pot at the top, you know, because it was, needed to be 5 inches tall. So, knowing the repeat of the crochet pattern, I just increased the design one more time around. So, I repeated the design one more time around, increasing it so it would taper out more. And then I used a new-to-me technique, which is a braided rope technique or stitch for crochet. And it's ingenious. I highly suggest looking it up on YouTube. You don't think when you watch the stitch, it doesn't make sense that it would work as far as the stitch is staying in place, and yet it does. It's hard for me to explain because you're working in and out of the same stitch and you in such a way that in your mind you think that you're going to unravel your stitches because you're doing it in this way, but it doesn't. It's like magic. And that, so I crocheted up 8 long pieces, 24 inches long of each piece for the hanging portion, and attached them each to the pot holder. And now I've got a pot holder, but we haven't hung it up yet because I do want to get a little insert for the bottom of the pot holder to try and catch any water that might leak out of the pot itself. So it is on hold for that purpose. And we need to get the ring to hang it from the ceiling. So there is that. But I started this on March 25th and I finished it on March 25th. And so that, my friends, is my on the shelf. On the couch. Well, the first thing I've been working on this past month is my Scrappy Pillow by Dana Ray Makes. I'm using Charming You Advent Calendars from 2022 and 2023, and I'm having a marvelous time. I started this on February 4th, and I'm continuing on. I believe I am... Let me see. I actually don't remember what crochet hook size I'm using, so let me just look that up really for USG or a 4mm crochet hook. And I am having a great time with this. I have altered the pattern. The pattern that Dana Ray Makes has, you knit a huge granny square and then you in essence fold it over on the pillow to make it into sort of, you connect the four corners in the back of the pillow of the granny square and you whip stitch up the sides and you create that square. Well, by doing so, I can't hand wash the cover, the yarn, and then I wouldn't be able to put the pillow into the washing machine. And especially with a toddler, I want to be able to do both. I want to be able to remove the pillow from the case anytime it gets filthy and hand wash the cover and put the pillow into the wash. As a result of that, what I've done is I've decided to knit or crochet up 2 large granny squares to the size of the pillow that I got, which is a 20-incher. And then I am going to whip stitch the sides of three of the 4 sides together for the 2 granny squares. And then insert and hand sew in a zipper on the top. And that way I can remove the hand crocheted 100% wool cover and hand wash it and then throw the pillow into the washing machine whenever I want. And I think that's a great solution for my conundrum, and I'm actually really enjoying it. I was getting a little tired of crocheting the granny square bigger and bigger and bigger. I really kind of like the smaller granny squares because they're fast and easy and you feel like you get a lot done. When it's a huge granny square like what I was doing in fingering weight, it was taking a long time, which is not a problem. I really enjoy the granny stitch. It's just with the 2 things of I just wanted to work on a smaller project for as far as the granny stitch was concerned, and then add in the fact that I wanted to figure out how to meet the problem that I was having around being able to wash this item when it was done. I think I came up with a good solution. A lot more complicated solution, let's not kid ourselves, but it is a good solution. So the next thing that's on the couch is my flax sweater by Tin Can Knits. I am using Lion Brand's Fisherman's Wool in the natural colorway, and I started this on March 1st. So I say I started this on March 1st, but I only swatched on March 1st. No, I swatched the day before. No, I swatched on March 1st. And then I cast on March 4th. And I am going gangbusters. I am using size US size 8 for the body and US size 6 for the cuffs, the neckband, and the bottom of the sweater. And it is a joy to knit with. I am loving this sweater. I have finished the entire body and 1.5 sleeves. And so, my friends, my new goal is to finish the sweater by the end of March. So that's 4 more days, and I have half a sleeve to knit. And I think it's totally doable. Now, this sweater fits me really well, and I did go down multiple sizes from what I usually knit. I am actually knitting the size large for this sweater, and for, you know, in my head, I just always think that I'm pretty darn big, like width-wise, as far as body shape is concerned. So I usually go to a size XXL as far as knitting sweaters, but they never fit me. They're always so big. I wonder what the solution is, Emily. Maybe actually retake your measurements and knit to a better gauge, a better size for you. So that's what I did this time around. I remeasured my bust. Now I have a 46-inch size bust. So I, technically speaking, I could have gone with the extra large size as far as the pattern is concerned for the flax sweater. However, the Lion Brand Fisherman's Wool is a bigger gauge than regular worsted weight yarn, and so I was getting more stitches to the inch than the swatch demanded, and I liked the swatch, the gauge that I got, so I wasn't going to change that. So what I did is I just went down one size as far as the pattern is concerned. And now this isn't blocked, but the large size fits me very well. I've got at least 4 inches of positive ease unblocked, mind you. And so my, you know, I probably could have knit the size medium and still had a lovely amount of, actually probably would have just been perfect as far as fit goes, and then with blocking I probably would have gotten about an inch of positive ease. However, this is my camping and hiking sweater, so I did want it to be oversized so that I could put it on over whatever I was wearing that day, take it on and off. So I did want a good amount of positive ease on this, and I'm happy with that. The one thing that I struggle with, especially with raglan shaped sweaters, is the size of the armholes. I have very skinny arms, but unfortunately for my size bust, I have to increase the raglans to a point that the arms are always, I could fit 2 arms into each sleeve of this sweater. So everything is always big. So I'm thinking one of the things that I just need to do is experiment with other sweater constructions, like set in sleeves. I could knit the pattern to a lot smaller arm depth while the rest of the body is at the correct size with set in sleeves. I just don't know that I would look great with set in sleeves. I don't know. I'm wearing a t-shirt style, but it's a long sleeve, but it's t-shirt material shirt today, and it is a set in shirt, and it is one of my favorite shirts, so maybe I need to rethink what I believe would look good on me. Of course, I've never done a hand-knit sweater with set-in sleeves for myself, so I can't tell you. And I think that's kind of sad on my part, that I've only ever done raglan shaping as far as sweaters are concerned. They're just so easy, you know? But if I don't like the fit, why do I continue with it? You know, I like the fit in every other aspect of a raglan sweater except the depth of the armholes. So there is that. So I've just been contemplating what that means for me as far as moving forward with new cast-ons for sweaters. Now, with that being said, my new goal is to get this done by the end of the month. So I will have knit an entire sweater in a month, and I'm really excited by that. The next thing that I've been working on this past month is the Mill Hollow Shawl by Emily Clausen, and I'm using Knit Picks Heatherly Sport in the Sea Glass colorway, and I'm using US size 6 needles for this. I'm loving this pattern. So this pattern is constructed tip to tip, and as you increase, there's garter on each side, and then there's a lace panel running up the middle. It's very beautiful. What was snagging me up was I was getting cocky, and I was watching some shows. And for me, when I see garter, a lot of times I just think, oh, that's a purl bump, and I need to purl this round. And so I create a stocking knit stitch fabric instead of continuing the garter. And I've caught myself 3 times now, and I've had to rip back 3 times to fix my mistake of switching from what's actually the pattern, which is garter stitch on the sides. And I was knitting I knit like 4 repeats all in garter, and I was like, oh my gosh. So I had to rip back pretty far. It was about 5 inches I had to rip back. So that being said, with all of my mistakes that I've made, I have 1 more increase to go, and then I'm on the flat portion of the shawl, and then I'll start the decrease. Now, this is for Mother's Day for my mom, so I've got some cushion as far as time is concerned, but my goal is to have this done by the end of April. So I'd like that. I want this done and the Rebea scarf for my mother-in-law by the end of April. Those are my 2 big ones. And then I'm going to stop talking about all that because that's future planning and stuff. And we had a long discussion about that last episode. One thing that I have been noticing is that I really enjoy knitting or crocheting while I'm in my sessions with my clients. And my clients love my projects. They're always wanting to know what I'm knitting or crocheting on, what inspired me to pick that up, and how the progress is going. So I use that as part of building rapport with my clients now. And one of the things is that I can't knit or crochet on something. Actually, I can't crochet at all during my sessions with my clients, because for crochet, I have to look down at the project constantly. With knitting, depending on the project, I maybe look down once or twice around for just a quick second. And otherwise, I'm still completely and fully engaged making eye contact with my client. And it doesn't disrupt the flow of the session at all. Well, with that being said, I finished the body of my flax sweater. For the sleeves, I can't knit those during my sessions because they require me to do decreases every 6th round. So I needed something I could have to knit on that's mindless. I could do socks, but at the moment, socks aren't really on my need-to-do list. More on my need to do / want to do for my loved ones is I had on my list the Musselboro hat for Mr. Radio. So I decided to go ahead and cast that on. And I am using Madeline Tosh Twist Light in the Stargazing colorway. It is so beautiful. It really does look like you're looking at a galaxy, but with a blue undertone. I've seen a lot of independent dyers use black for the undertone with something that's like midnight sky based, but they use a beautiful jewel toned blue for this, and I love it. It's going to look so handsome on Mr. Radio. So I am increasing the crown for Mr. Radio. I'm using US size 3.5 millimeter or I'm using a US size 3. US size 3. Sorry. I got it now. And so I'm in the middle of increasing the crown, which means I can't, again, knit on that during my sessions. And I am so invested on getting this sweater done that every time I'm knitting on something that doesn't require thought, I mean, that requires me to focus in any way, I'm knitting on my flax sweater. So I do have a little bit cast on for the Musselboro hat. I've got the really hard piece done, which is the cast on for me. I really do not like top-down hats because the cast on for the magic ring is always so clunky, and I don't really enjoy knitting with double points. That being said, I find that for the Musselboro, in order for me to keep track of the increases, I really do need to be working on it with, for now anyway, with double points. Once I've got it increased out to the width that I want it for Mr. Radio's head, I will switch to Magic Loop. But for now, it's on double points. So, yeah. But I cast this on March 10th. No rush. My new goal for this is to have it done for his birthday, which is in July, so I've got a good while to go. The whole reason I cast it on was so that I could have mindless knitting for my sessions. And the last thing on my needles is Carmen's Shopper Socken. And this is a free pattern on Ravelry. I am using Charming You Sock, the 2023 Halloween colorway. And this yarn reminded me of 80s punk or 80s slouchy socks. They're just the colors just immediately spoke to me of doing slouchy socks. So I did cast this on March 4th, and I was designing my own slouchy socks, and it failed miserably. I got the entire leg done and tried the dang thing on, and it didn't work at all. It was ridiculous. So I frogged the entire leg, recast on, and during that time, one of my friends contacted me and said, "Oh, hey, I found a few years back this free pattern. It's more of a recipe for slouchy socks. Maybe you could take it and run with it and make it even better." And I was like, "Sure, I'll take a look at it." It's a great recipe. Yeah. It's in essence doing one color brioche alternating with one by one twisted rib. And it does create a slouch. And unfortunately, this sock also means that I can't knit on it during my sessions because of the patterning. But I am so excited to have slouchy socks. Like, I love slouchy socks. They are so much fun. What's really funny to me is that I had this idea to knit up slouchy socks. And then a week later, all of a sudden, I'm watching podcasts and I'm looking on Instagram. And all of a sudden, every knitter out there, every Instagram influencer knitter person out there is doing slouchy socks. I'm like, what the heck? Like, come on. I was being original. I was not leaning on anybody else for my influencing to do the slouchy socks. For some reason, that's really important for me to distinguish in my head. Because I actually really dislike following trends and jumping on the bandwagon of what's hot and exciting right now. Or even the mere idea that I'm an influencer makes me shudder. And I know I'm not an influencer in any way. And so I'm good with that. But I just got really annoyed when I saw that these other people were knitting slouchy socks. I was just like, dude, come on. So as a result, I've kind of fallen out of love with this project. It has nothing to do with the yarn, has nothing to do with the recipe pattern, has everything to do with Emily's psyche saying, you can't knit on this now because everybody else is, and you're not a follower. I was like, come on. So you guys probably couldn't hear that, but I just rolled my eyes at myself. But that's how my brain works sometimes. But that, my friends, is On the Couch. In the Basket. Surprise! Another new segment. I wanted a segment that I could talk to you guys about my acquisitions, not just in the realm of knitting, but in my regular everyday life. If I came across a doodad that I found practical and useful, then I wanted a place that I could share that with you. Now, in today's segment, I'm only sharing knitting yarn related items. But in the future, I'm going to be including some other fun things that I found that have been useful for around the house. So the very first thing that I purchased this last month is called, I'm going to murder the word, so I'll spell it out for you in a second. Fashulery. Fashulery. This is 54.68 yards of hollow pipe rubber cord, 2 millimeter. And I got this for $10.98 on Amazon in a hot pink colorway. And why is that exciting? Well, you guys are probably fully aware of the try-it-on tubing that makers and sellers have all over the place. And when I cast on the flax sweater, I wanted to have some try-it-on tubing because I don't really enjoy, actually I really despise putting my yarn on scrap, my sleeves stitches on scrap yarn and then struggling to pick it up afterwards when I'm now knitting the sleeve. I really dislike it. So I had determined I was going to get some try-it-on tubing this time around. But then when I started looking at what everybody was pricing the try-it-on tubing out for, it was, like, it wasn't ridiculous. Let's just be honest. It's not ridiculous. But once I started researching out what try-it-on tubing is, essentially it's scuba tubing used with scuba divers. And so once I figured that out, I started down the rabbit hole of actually pinpointing out what it is. And then I found it on Amazon. And I found that I could get 54, almost 55 yards of what we are calling try-it-on tubing for $11. This will last me my entire knitting career and probably at least another generation of knitters as well. It was a game changer. Oh my goodness, my friends. It worked just like they talk about. I was able to attach the rubber tubing to the tip of my knitting needle, my US size 8 knitting needle, and pull the 2 millimeter tubing through the stitches and have my stitches live on that try-it-on tubing for the entire time that I was knitting on the body of the sweater, and it was just as easy to put my stitches back on my needle. It literally less than a minute to put my stitches back on the needle. Whereas if I had had my stitches for my sleeves on a piece of scrap yarn, it probably would have taken me 10 minutes. Now, 10 minutes in the grand scheme of thing isn't a big deal, but for me, it's my least favorite thing about knitting sweaters, and it's often the reason why I don't complete my sweaters, is the whole thing about picking up for the sleeves. I seriously dislike it. I don't mind knitting sleeves. I do dislike picking up for the sleeves, and this was a game changer for me. Love it. So, try it on tubing, for those of us that want to save a little money, is now called Fashulery. Hollow pipe rubber cord 2 millimeter. That's what you want to look for. Okay. The next thing that I've purchased is 200 grams of fresh dried lavender buds. I do this every year, and I do get it from Amazon because being up here in Alaska, we don't have anybody, first off, that can really. Like, I'm sure there's somebody that can grow lavender, but not in bulk here in Alaska. So I have to get it from out of state anyway. And in order for me to get the amount of lavender buds that I need, and I'll tell you why in a minute, it means that I have to be economical. So I get it from Amazon. Now, this cost me $13 for 200 grams. What I use it for is a pest repellent in my stash. And I also put it in every single one of our clothing drawers as well. And I love it. So I rotate these out every spring. This year, I went ahead and also bought some new sachets to put the lavender buds in because I'd been regurgitating the same sachets for like 5 or 6 years and they're getting pretty tattered. So I'm just getting rid of the whole old batch of lavender sachets and starting with a fresh one. Now, this does take a good amount of time for you to do, putting the lavender buds into sachets, and it is kind of messy. So I highly suggest that if you do this, clear off your kitchen table, maybe cut up some paper bags to put down as a kind of a runner or a catch-all for the lavender buds, and use a spoon and just systematically just be, you know, just make an afternoon of it. So for me, my goal is to have at least 25 sachets. My real goal is to have 50, but it just depends on how far the 200 grams goes. But I will be working on that within the next week or so. I now have all the supplies, so I'll be working on it. So it's really great. The next thing I got is a whole new assortment of Red Heart Super Saver. I mentioned that I made all those Easter eggs and those tidbit baskets. That's what I'm calling them. And in order to do that, I did splurge on some more yarn. Now, for most of my knitting life, I have been what I would term a knitting snob. Don't want to knit with anything less than wool or natural fibers. Prefer fingering weight over any other weight of yarn. And to tell you the truth, I still feel that way for the majority of things that I create. However, Red Heart has won a place in my heart because it is so economical, and also so durable. And when I make gifts and my compassion knits or crochets or toys for Jimmy, I don't have to worry about care instructions. Now, would I make anything for somebody that was a wearable out of Red Heart Super Saver? No, I would not. Toys, maybe a blanket? I don't know. I'd have to think about that. But definitely toys and knickknacks. I would, like, Red Heart is awesome. I love it. Now, juxtapose that to my last acquisition. Oh my goodness, my friends. I was the recipient of something super, super special. So we have a young man who in our church who is, he's a missionary. And he comes from the state of Wyoming and he's up here. And because my husband is a new member, we're getting what we call the new member discussions. And so they come over every week and we love our time with them. They are just wonderful young men. So genuine and so heartfelt. And each new batch that comes through, we make new friends and we stay in contact with them. And it's just really special. Well, this young man happens to have grown up on a sheep farm in Wyoming. And so, of course, I was ooing and awing and gushing. And he showed me lots of pictures of the farm and of the sheep. And oh my gosh, so they have Romney sheep. And he was discussing how it's really expensive for them to get their wool processed and milled and spun into yarn. And so I said, well, if you'd like me to talk to your mom, maybe I can help. I don't really have much contacts in the knitting world as far as production goes, but I'd be willing to learn and help out so that you guys can actually get your yarn out there better. And he was so excited, and I've been in contact with mom. And then last week they came over and he had 6 skeins of Romney, from the weight of the yarn, I'm thinking it's worsted weight. And I have no idea how many yards I have. I'm going to do the, I'm going to just weigh them out and find out how many ounces I have and take as much of a guess as I can on it. But it's such beautiful, beautiful yarn, and it smells of sheep, and it came directly from a farm or a ranch in Wyoming of a good friend. Currently, these 6 skeins are residing in my freezer just to make sure they are pest-free, but I am so overwhelmed with the love and generosity of this young man and his mom. I can't describe it. Like, people are so good. It's lovely. Now, can you go out and get this yarn? No, but, you know, I could be teaming up with them. You know, we're still talking and just getting to know each other, but who knows what the future might bring. But I would love to be able, in some small way, to help this rancher make a better go out of it, because it is so hard to be a rancher in any generation, in any time in our history of the world. It's always been hard. But the way that they are price gouged at the market now makes it almost impossible for anyone to make a living as a rancher or a farmer. And I am so disappointed in our corporate engines, how that works, because as the consumer, I pay a premium price for most of the things that I consume. And yet the people that are doing all of the hard work to bring that wool to market are not being compensated. It's just flabbergasting to me. And yeah, I have a few friends now that have farms, and so I'm from around the lower 48. I've got one in Washington. Now I've got one in Wyoming, and I have, is it Michigan? I think it's Michigan. The mitten. Yeah, the mitten is Michigan. Yeah. And I was thinking I would see if we couldn't do a Zoom conference and all talk together about this conundrum and kind of come up with a game plan or something. I don't know. I'm just really excited by the possibilities of being a part of this process. Because, I mean, I'm a typical knitter. I have dreams and aspirations of having sheep one day. Not to the point that I want to be a productionist of yarn and wool, but, you know, almost honestly to have as pets. So anyway, that's my heart is fluttering. I am so excited and happy about these are my most cherished skeins of yarn in my entire curation of my collection of yarn, hands down, because of the feeling and the generosity and how it got into my hands. It's just amazing. So that, my friends, is in the basket. Roaming and foraging. As the sun is shining brighter and the days are growing longer, spring cleaning emerges as more than just a household chore. It's a rejuvenating ritual that can significantly uplift your mental health. Clearing out clutter and tidying up your living space can lead to a clearer mind, reduced stress, and a sense of accomplishment. Plus, it's a physical activity that not only revitalizes your home, but also instills a feeling of renewal and order into your life. So as we move forward into the warmer months of the year, here's an invitation to embrace the therapeutic power of spring cleaning and let it sweep away the cobwebs of winter, both in your home and in your mind. At the same time, spring cleaning can feel like a daunting task, so I came up with a method to reduce stress and have some fun while diving into these larger tasks. And then afterwards, in my next segment, I'm going to give some insights into how I store my wool and my natural fibers so that I can preserve their natural oils and colors. So, step one, set the stage. Before you begin, create a playlist of your favorite upbeat songs, or put on your favorite funny movie. You know, music has the power to energize and improve your mood, and as you clean, you can let the rhythm move you and turn your chores, honestly, into like a dance party and a sing-along. And at the same time, if you switch gears and put on your favorite movie, you know, because you have watched this movie so many times, it is a favorite, it's a cherished old friend. You don't actually have to be watching it, but you might find yourself quoting it or saying the lines along with everybody else as you do your tasks and laughing at the jokes that you know that are coming up. Step 2, make a game plan. Write down all the areas you want to tackle. Then you can break them down into smaller tasks. For example, instead of just writing clean the kitchen, you can list out the tasks such as organize the pantry, wipe down appliances, clean out the fridge, and this makes your goals more manageable and less intimidating. Recently, my husband and I, we've been doing some spring cleaning, and I've been following my steps here that I'm listing out to you guys. And one of the things that I mentioned to my husband was is that we needed to clean out the dining room, which is attached to the kitchen. It's not, I guess it's a separate room, but it's really part of the kitchen. But I have a clear image in my mind of what I constitute the dining room. And so my husband asked me, well, what does that mean? What do you need? And I was like, I've got my list. And on my list, I had deep cleaning the kitchen table, which meant the base of the table and everything. So we're not just wiping down the top of the table. We're cleaning the legs because, you know, we got a toddler and he touches all these things with his grubby hands. Wiping down and cleaning all of the kitchen furniture, so the chairs. Cleaning out the pantry and then the hutch that we have extra appliances in, and organizing all those things. Also moving the kitchen table and vacuuming and cleaning the floor around that. So with that in mind, my husband's like, oh, okay, doable. And before I knew it, my husband was already in there taking care of the pantry and cleaning that out, which I was really happy about because that was the thing that I was feeling the most overwhelmed about. And it just was so enjoyable to have him. And I'm going to talk about the enjoyable piece a little bit more later on. But by that, we were able to go down and say and check off each task and go through things pretty systematically. And before you knew it, we were done with the kitchen. And even a week later, oh, it's so lovely. I'm just looking at it now. It's wonderful to have that off my list. And it's just, yeah. The next step 3 is one room at a time. So my invitation to you is to focus on one room before moving on to the next, because this will give you a sense of accomplishment and prevent you from feeling scattered. I've mentioned in the past that I have ADHD, and one of the things that it presents as is that when I start working on a project, I can very easily get distracted, honestly, by just looking around, and I start cataloging in my mind, oh my gosh, this needs to be taken care of, and oh, I can't forget to do that. And so one of the things that I do with this is I have a sheet of paper that I write down on it. When I think of something I need to do, I write down it down on a sheet of paper. That way I can continue with the current task and not be distracted and start working on a whole other task or project, and then the first one either doesn't get done or things start to pile up and I get overwhelmed because now I've got multiple tasks or projects going at the same time and I don't know how I'm going to accomplish them. But that's how my mind works. So I'm inviting you to learn from, I guess just learn from Emily's neurodivergent mind. Step 4, set a timer. Decide how much time you want to spend on each task and set a timer. This creates a sense of urgency and helps you stay focused. Plus, you're racing against the clock, and that can be a really thrilling challenge. So an example of this would be, say you want to go through your closet of clothes, and we're only talking about the task of clothes, not all the other things that are in the closet. And this, you can decide for yourself if clothes also encompasses shoes or if it's just things you wear, you know, as an outfit. I say that and I recognize that a lot of people are not like me and don't just have one pair of shoes. And you don't care what outfit you're wearing, you always wear the same pair of shoes. I know that there are people out there that shoes are part of the outfit, so I probably just muddied the waters, but I apologize for that. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is set a timer say 30 minutes, and you go through all of your cloth clothes. How about that? And decide keep or donate. And you only remove from your closet the things you're going to donate. You don't remove everything from the closet. You just remove the things that are going to be donated. And then as you're working, the timer's going, and you'll be really surprised at how quickly you can go through that. And then after you've taken a break, you can come back and once more go through that pile of things you want to donate and make sure that, yes, solidify that these are all things that you're going to donate. So step 5, declutter with purpose. So that last little piece that I said kind of leads into this. As you're sorting through your belongings, you can ask yourself, you know, does each item bring me joy or does it serve a purpose? And if it doesn't, to either one of those questions, you can thank the item for its service. I know that sounds a little cliche, and there is a whole book around this. I know the art and joy of cleaning or something like that. I can't remember what the book is called. I've never read it, but I hear tell it's really good. But, you know, items serve a really important purpose for us. You know, maybe I just recently gave up a couple sweaters that honestly were so ratty I couldn't even donate them, but I'd had them for like 30 years since I was a teenager, and they had a lot of significance to me, and a lot of them had been regulated to only the pajama pile, and now they were at the point where they couldn't even be worn for pajamas anymore, and they just had to be given up. And I did thank them for their service, and I appreciated that they clothed me and they saw me through some joyful times and some hard times, and like they were a comfort to me all these years, and I thanked them for it. So ask yourself, does the item bring you joy or have a purpose? Now I say all this, and there are certain things in your life that this will not apply to. So for instance, I have a very well-curated stash of yarn or collection of yarn. And I am not going to go through that. I have tried multiple times to destash my yarn, and every time I do it, I feel this pang of remorse around it. Because I did choose this yarn with joy in my heart for a purpose in the future. And maybe the time for that yarn to come out of that tub or that area of my collection has not come yet. Or maybe at this stage of life, I don't feel as drawn to that yarn as I did, say, 2 years ago. But that doesn't mean that in another year or so, I might not feel that draw again. So you might have that similar feeling about your yarn, your curated collection of whatever hobby you might have. And that's okay. You don't have to give up things just because you're saying, oh, this isn't serving a purpose. So if we go back to that first question of, does this bring me joy? My yarn brings me joy. And so, yes, I will answer yes every time to that. So I keep hold of my collection of yarn. So keep that in mind as well as you're decluttering. You don't have to be a taskmaster to yourself and very demanding on yourself around this. Step 6, reward yourself. After completing each room or even just a task, I say just a task, but to me, things like cleaning out your closet as far as clothes or reorganizing the pantry, that's a task within a larger room, and those tasks are big, right? But when you've completed one of those things, reward yourself with a small treat. Maybe it's a piece of chocolate or a short break or an episode of your favorite show. Whatever you decide to be your reward for that. Because a reward will keep your spirits high and motivate you to continue. Step 7, enlist help. Cleaning is more fun with company. So you can invite a friend or a family member to join you. You can chat, laugh, and work together, and you can make the whole process feel like a social event. And so earlier I talked about the process of cleaning out the dining room with my husband, and I love my husband so much, not just, you know, as a romantic partner, but he's my best friend. We laugh so much. We also talk about super serious things and concerns and stuff. But we had so much fun in each other's company cleaning out the dining room. It was just great. And my husband is the opposite of me. He's pretty analytical. And so he's not as attached to physical things as I am. So he's able to look at an item and ask if it's serving a purpose and actually let go of that item a lot easier than I am. So we balance each other really well in that regard. So maybe think about having a friend over that can balance you out a little bit. And lastly, celebrate your successes. Once you've finished, take a moment and appreciate your hard work. Enjoy the cleanliness and order that you've created. Remember, your space is a reflection of your mind, and a clear space means a clear mind. My friends, spring cleaning doesn't have to be a drag of a chore. With the right approach, it can be a fun and rewarding experience. So, put on your favorite tunes, roll up your sleeves, and let's spring into action. See what I did there? A play on the word spring cleaning to spring into action. Oh, I love it. Homesteading, storing your yarn. Wool yarn, with its rich colors and natural fibers, is a beloved staple of knitters and crocheters, most of us, if not all of us. However, the improper storage of your wool and fibers can lead to faded colors, loss of natural oils, and a vulnerability to pests. How many times have you shuddered when you've heard of another podcaster or a friend who's had a moth infestation? Oh, it just scares you, right? So in this segment, we're going to explore the best practices for storing your wool yarn to maintain its vibrancy, preserve its natural properties, and keep it readily accessible for your creative endeavors. So the first thing to do is choose the right environment for storage. When you're selecting a storage space for your wool yarn, prioritize a cool and dry environment away from direct sunlight. Exposure to sunlight can cause colors to fade over time, while excessive heat and moisture can promote mold and mildew growth. So we're looking for a temperature-controlled room or closet being the most ideal for maintaining the integrity of your yarn. I have my yarn stored in bins under my bed and in my closet, and I know those are two places that are away from sunlight and are away from pests and mildew and things like that. However, it also means that out of sight can also mean out of mind. So I keep a really good record, or I did until, recently. I've gotten a little behind in that. But I usually keep a pretty good record in my Ravelry profile of what I have in my storage, because I don't want to buy items that I already have, right? So the next subject is about those containers. My suggestion is to utilize breathable containers. So avoid storing your wool in airtight containers, such as, you know, those rubber tubs, although I am guilty of that for some of my yarn, because this can trap moisture and lead to the growth of mold and mildew. Instead, opt for breathable storage options such as cotton bags, mesh bins, or open shelves, because these containers will allow air to circulate freely, preventing moisture buildup and preserving the natural oils of your yarn. I have a lot of my yarn stored in these cloth clothing storage zipper bins that I got off of Amazon. And if I can find them, because it was, I don't even know how long ago, 7 or 8 years ago that I purchased these, I'll link them in the show notes for you to be able to go and find them. But they're really good because I feel like they're durable enough to keep out the pests, but also breathable enough so I don't have to worry about mold or mildew as well. The next item is incorporating natural repellents. So to safeguard your wool yarn from pests without resorting to harsh chemicals, do you guys remember those mothballs? Oh, I shudder to think when long time ago when I was first storing my yarn, I used mothballs. Oh my gosh, what was I thinking? I had to get rid of all that yarn because it was, no matter what I did, it all smelled like mothballs, no matter what. And it was very irritating to my nose and my senses. Yeah. So, but without using harsh chemicals, you can consider incorporating natural repellents such as lavender sachets, cedar balls, or cloves. I use all of those. I love them. You can also buy on Amazon sachets of cedar shavings, I think it's what it's called, or cedar. I don't even know what's inside it. I just know it smells like cedar. And so you can put that in your closet or with your yarn. And I love using cloves. So these aromatic options not only deter pests, but also impart a pleasant scent to your yarn storage space. And if you place them strategically throughout your storage area, you can provide maximum protection from the dreaded moths. Next, organize for accessibility and inspiration. Organizing your yarn, your wool yarn, in a way that is both accessible and visually inspiring can enhance your creative process. So consider arranging your yarn by color, by weight, or fiber content to facilitate easy selection without starting a whole new project. And you can use transparent containers or open shelving. Whew, I'm tired, so I'm having a hard time with words. So using transparent containers or open shelving allows you to see your yarn collection at a glance, sparking inspiration for your next masterpiece. I have tried over the years many different options for organizing my yarn. My favorite one has been via color, but also within that via color, I separate out my sweater quantities. I store my sweater quantities in a separate bin, but then in the color scheme of things, I have all the different weights of yarn within that bin. For me, that is most inspiring. For another person, that might be confusing and frustrating to them. They might feel better if they store it by weight, or if they store it by brand, or whoever dyed it, you know. So we figure out what is most inspiring for you. My way is not always going to work for everybody. Next thing is to rotate and refresh. So periodically, assess your yarn stash and ensure that it remains in optimal condition. Rotate your yarns to prevent any one skein from being neglected or forgotten, and take this opportunity to inspect each skein for signs of damage or pests and address any issues promptly to prevent further damage to your collection. Do I always do this? No. Do I do it mostly during the springtime when I am rotating out my lavender sachets? Yes. But I don't know. I've never had a pest infestation. But one of the ways that I also make sure that that doesn't happen is if I trade yarns with another person. I don't do this if I buy yarns from a store, which I recently heard a horror story about this, so I might start doing this too. But when I trade yarns with a friend or somebody out of state, I immediately take that yarn and put it in my freezer. Or like in the wintertime, I just put it out on my back deck for a month in freezing temperatures, because this allows that any pest will die off if done that way. Or alternatively, you can put it in your oven. I've never done this, so don't quote me on this. I'm not sure what temperature. I'm thinking 200, maybe 185. I don't know. But if you put it in the oven for about an hour or two, I think. I shouldn't even be talking about this if I don't know what I'm talking about. But supposedly that will kill off any pests as well. I've recently heard of somebody who had bought a yarn from a store, a local yarn store, brought it home, put it straight into their stash, and then about 6 months later they went to go get it out, and that one skein of yarn had lots of moth-eaten pieces in it, and that moth had spread to other skeins of yarn too. So that is a scary story right there, right? You know, that yarn that I talked about in the basket that my friend gave me from Their Montana ranch, oh, sorry, Wyoming ranch, is in my freezer right now. I trust my friend. I love them. They are wonderful. But does that mean that I'm immediately going to say that this yarn doesn't have the potential to have been contaminated somewhere along the line? No. So I put it into freezer bags, and it's in my freezer until, I think, mid-April. My friends, by following these guidelines for storing of your yarn and wool yarn, you can maintain its color, preserve its natural oils, and protect it from pests while keeping it easily accessible and a source of inspiration for your creative process. By choosing the right environment, utilizing breathable containers, incorporating natural repellents, organizing for accessibility and inspiration, and regularly rotating and refreshing your yarn stash, you can ensure that your wool yarn remains a cherished part of your crafting repertoire for years to come. Around the campfire. Well, my friends, you may have noticed that it has been about a month since I last recorded, and it's not for want of trying, but there has been a lot of more health drama from yours truly. But before I get into that, let's talk about the fun, good things that happened. So this month, Mr. Radio was able to take a week off, and we didn't have any plans. We didn't go anywhere. We didn't go on any trips. We're still in recovery from me not working for a year. And so we're being very assiduous in how we spend our money. We're saving, we're building back up our savings, and we are working on, like, if we have any extra income, it's not going towards going out frolicking around town. We say, okay, is this enough money to upgrade such and such? Now, I can't remember if I had a new toilet last episode or if, yeah, it was last episode because it was a Super Bowl weekend. Yeah. Okay. So we got the new toilet last month, and this month we had a really great surprise because about 5 or 6 years ago, I closed a bank account. At least I thought I had. And since then, I have been, every couple of months, I get a notice in the mail inviting me to log into my bank account. Not sending me a bank statement. No. Never once did they send me a bank statement. Just an invitation to log in to my account online. And I would always be like, why? Why are they sending me this? I've closed that bank account and I just got stubborn and I just never logged in because it didn't make sense to me. I closed that bank account. At least that's what my memory says. Well, I got another notice while Mr. Radio was off that week. And so Mr. Radio was just like, you know what, honey, it's no big deal. Just log in and see what's there. And I think maybe internally I was scared because, like, what if I owed them money? Like, I don't like owing anybody money, so I was sticking my head in the sand. But I was like, fine, okay, I will log in just to make you happy. Well, there was money in that bank account. Enough that we were able to go out that day and buy a refrigerator. Now, this refrigerator is not a fancy refrigerator. It does not have a water dispenser or an ice maker. It is not a side-by-side or have any of those fancy pull-out freezer drawers and, you know, double-layer drawers for the freezer and things like that. Nope. It's your standard old freezer box on top, refrigerator on bottom. But here's the two things. A, it was built after 1998, which was our old one. B, it is not held together by duct tape. And C, it is a third larger than our old one, meaning we actually have space. We are so overwhelmed by the amount of space we have in our freezer right now. It's amazing. I always have to be very careful about what I purchase because our freezer has always been so small. I can't buy a bunch of things in bulk. And then, of course, you know, I like to make jams. I like to make freezer jam. Well, it's really hard to make freezer jam when you don't have any freezer space. but I've always made it work. But now, oh my goodness, and it keeps a temperature. Like, things are actually cold now when we take them out of the fridge. It's amazing. And it's just wonderful. So I'm really excited for this summer to go berry picking and to make more freezer jam and to restock. We're getting pretty low on my homemade jam. You know, it's lasted us through this whole winter, but I think we've got 2 jars left out of the 20-something I had. Now, 20-something of jars of jam, like, I dispersed that, like, a bunch of them were over in my parents' garage freezer, and then, you know, when I would run out here, I would go over and get, like, 5 more bottles to put into my freezer here. So, you know, we've been pretty good, and we do love our jam at our house. Toast and jam, baby. I love jam on waffles, on pancakes. Oh, it's just so lovely. Oh, here's an interesting combination to try. Don't knock it till you try it, though, my friends, okay? Sausage with or Spam. And yes, I do like Spam, you know, with a little dollop of jam on top. Just give it a try. See what you think. I really like it. And my husband likes it, too. He always looks at me funny when I invite him to try a new, to him, what would be an odd flavor combination. But then he tries it and he's like, oh, that really works. I'm like, yeah, I know, because I'm a genius. For instance, when we were first dating, we used to like to go out and go to all the different diners here in town. We were working our way through all the locally owned diners in Anchorage because, you know, we could go to another chain restaurant, but, you know, when I would come up from Kenai for the weekend, we would try a different diner every week, and that would be our date. We would go for breakfast dates. And or maybe it was brunch. I'm not really sure. One of the first times we did that, I got French fries with a meal, and I asked for a side of pickles. And my now husband was like, why? And I said, oh, have you never tried pickles and French fries? And he just thought it was the weirdest thing. But I got him to try it, and he loves it. It's his favorite now. So one of his favorite things is to do pickles and French fries. Similarly, I don't think this is an odd thing, and I don't think you guys will think this is an odd thing, but he loves soup, and I enjoy tomato soup. Well, the way I make tomato soup is that we put cheddar cheese in it when it's all done, so it melts. And the first time I invited him to try that, he's just like, that is just too weird. No. And I'm just like, why would that be weird? Like, you dip your toasted cheese sandwich in tomato soup. Why not just put the cheese straight into the soup? So he finally tried it and he loves it. Similarly, mayonnaise with corn dogs. Man, none of this stuff is healthy stuff, is it? I'm noticing a theme here. but I really enjoy dipping my corn dog in mayonnaise. And he tried it and he likes it. I could go on. I have a lot of odd flavor combinations, but I don't think they're odd, and you might not think they're odd either. So, you know, you're my people. Maybe we are of a like. Back to my freezer fridge story. I am just so excited to make jam and not have to, you know, piece parcel it out between my relatives so that they can store some of my freezer jam for me this year. And there's now this huge space where Jimmy has just been loving with playing with his magnets on the freezer doors, and he does that every day. He just has such a great time. And so that whole week Mr. Radio was home, we didn't do anything super special. We just spent a lot of quality family time together. And I did take some time off from work. I did my, you know, practice manager work, but I didn't see clients that week. And so I think I worked about 3 to 4 hours a day. And otherwise, it was just all family time. And it was really enjoyable. And my favorite thing was every night when we went to bed, my husband would look at me and he just would say, Today was a good day. I love spending time with our son. And my heart would just melt because our son, our little Jimmy, is the funnest, brightest, so intelligent, like ridiculous intelligence. He's refusing to talk, though. I know he's got the words in him, but he's holding strong to that jibber jabber. And he's just incredible. The things that Jimmy figures out just amazes me every single day. And so, yeah, that was the sum total, honestly. Like, we had a couple doctor's appointments sprinkled throughout, but really, and we did splurge and go out for a couple meals, but otherwise, it was just what would conceivably be called a normal week, really, except for our big surprise where we had a little extra money and got the fridge. Oh my gosh, my friends. And a friend of mine, when she saw that I got the fridge, she was like, oh, hey, I just upgraded my stove. I know you don't like your gas stove. And I do. I like gas, guys. I like gas stoves. But the thing is that open flame makes me super nervous with Jimmy. And then the knobs on the stove is in such a place where Jimmy is playing with them. And I have to be on constant vigil because he will turn on the gas range, but it won't light the actual fire. And so gas will just be pouring into our atmosphere of our home. And if I don't catch it immediately, it's dangerous. And I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Well, besides that, that stove is pretty old as well. It's not held together by duct tape, but it is pretty rickety now. But our friend upgraded their stove to a gas range. But their electric stove is actually in perfect working order. I think it's only a couple years old, honestly. And the knobs are up above so that Jimmy can't reach them. So our thought process is that Mr. Radio may be running over and getting that range. He's just nervous because he's not really sure how to go about changing a stove from in a house, like plugging up the gas components in the house itself and then connecting an electric stove. He's never done something like that, so I get it. He's nervous. So that was really it, but as far as the big reason why I haven't actually recorded is because I have had multiple allergic reactions to medications this last month, and they have knocked me for a loop and been very scary. I am currently, as of this moment, actually recovering from another one. So, 3 weeks ago, I started a new week-long insulin that is called Ozempic. Now, you might be familiar with it because I guess there's a craze going on where if you want to lose weight, you take Ozempic. I don't know. I don't care about losing weight. However, I have noticed that it is very hard for diabetics to get their hands on this insulin. And the reason being is because it's so popular right now with losing weight for people. That doesn't irritate me at all. No, it doesn't. but I did start that new medication. Now, the way Ozempic works is you start on a low dose for a month, and then you double that dose the next month, and you keep on increasing the dose until you get to a place where your sugars and your insulin are more regulated in your system. So our thought process in all of this for my doctor, my team, my doctors, was that because I have so many lows, the fast acting insulin is not safe for me to take. The daily insulin is okay, but even that is sometimes scary. So their thought process was to transfer me slowly over to this week-long insulin so that I would have a more regulated insulin levels in my body. Well, the first week I took the Ozempic, I felt really weird and not comfortable at all. I had a lot of symptoms, But I just kind of assumed that was part and parcel with taking this new insulin. Then, the second week, I'm in so much pain with my arms. I got a last-minute appointment with my doctor, and I went in to her, and I told her, I need pain medication. And she looked a little shocked, because I've always been very against pain medication. And I told her, I said, well, I say that, but I want you to know it needs to be pain medication that won't alter my state of mind and won't send me to sleep. So I'll still be safe to drive, take care of Jimmy, do my regular work, and it's not addictive in any fashion. And so she was like, oh, well, there's this new drug that's not new at all, duloxetine. Now, duloxetine has been traditionally used for depression. So it's an SSRI. But recently, the FDA passed it for use as far as pain management with people who have fibromyalgia, which I have. And so she said, well, let's give that a try. And so she started me on the lowest dose. So this is how that week went. I saw my doctor in the morning. On the way home, I picked up my duloxetine. When I got home, it was time, my alarm went off that told me it was time to take my weekly dose of Ozempic. So I did. Then that night before I went to bed, just to be on the safe side, I didn't want to take the duloxetine during the day because I didn't know how I would react. So I was like, all right, well, I'll take it, my first dose, at night when I go to sleep and see how it does. So that's what I did. So there was about 6 hours of leeway time between taking the Ozempic and the duloxetine. By 3 a.m., I was swollen. I was sweating, but I wasn't running a fever. I was shaking. My entire core was shaking. I was throwing up. It was just really bad. So I called my doctor the next morning. Mr. Radio, I did actually send Mr. Radio to work that morning, but like literally 2 minutes before he was to start work, I called him and said he had to come home because I was that bad off. It was really scary. We didn't know if he was going to have to take me to the emergency room because I was actually starting to have trouble breathing. And I literally couldn't even pick up Jimmy. And I was just way out of it. And that's me downplaying what happened that morning. It was really scary. But my doctor said, okay, well, take Benadryl, see if that helps. If by noon you're still having trouble breathing, you need to go to the emergency room. So I took Benadryl, and it knocked me out for 20 hours. So our thought process was that it was the duloxetine. That's what gave me the allergic reaction. So I wasn't allowed to take duloxetine from that moment on. Well, I took my third dose of Ozempic this week, and guess what happened? The exact same thing. It's now 3 days later. My hands are still shaking. I still am having throw up in my throat, like acid and stuff in my throat. I am very tired. I am very irritable. I'm very scared. I have a lot of anger right now towards my doctors. And it's not even necessarily their fault. I think logically it makes sense to them what their conclusion was. But it's not what I was allergic to. And so now we're having to do this whole rigmarole of figuring these things out. So the reason why I mention all of this, I was contacted by a handful of you after my last episode in which I talked about my chronic pain. And I want to just talk about that for a moment. I think I'll do a larger segment on this sometime later, but when you're a person with a chronic illness, or if you live with chronic pain, the drain it has on your psyche, on your emotional well-being, not even talking about your physical health, is so damaging. And It is hard to be able to look outside of yourself a lot of times to even have empathy for what other people are going through when you are in so much pain all the time. It's hard to put energy towards the people you love, because by putting energy into the people you love, you are now taking away precious reserves of energy that you need for yourself just so you can function in daily life. And so I want to acknowledge the struggle that people have that have chronic illness and chronic pain. And I also want to acknowledge how really messed up our Western medical system is. I am a cancer survivor. I am a trauma survivor. I have multiple chronic illnesses and pain. And my doctors don't care. And I say that, and I know it sounds harsh, but it's the truth. My doctors, their reaction to me not being able to breathe from an allergic reaction was, "Oh, you'll be fine, whatever, just take this." I could not take care of my son for a full 2 days because of this allergic reaction. And it happened again this last week. Like, they are not comprehending. Their rolling of the dice and being flippant and nonchalant about how they care for us immediately impacts our daily life and our emotional well-being. The fact that I tell you right now that I do not trust my medical team is probably one of the worst things I have ever said in my life, because they literally hold my life in their hands. And for me to say that I do not trust them means that I don't trust that I will be able to live. Does that make sense? Like, what is the quality of my life going to be moving forward? And I know many of you have these same concerns, these same struggles, and these same questions and fears. And you can tell that I'm really agitated by it, because my voice is getting a lot more strained, and it's been hard. I want you to know that you are not alone. And I invite you to reach out to me or anyone else that has something even remotely similar to what you are going through, so that you can have support of someone who can understand the daily drain, the daily struggle you have moving forward in life. Mr. Radio is absolutely wonderful, but he is as healthy as a horse. He has no comprehension of the struggles that my physical health puts me through every single day. And that's okay. I'm actually really happy that he doesn't have that comprehension. But he also tries to be very empathetic and be there for me. And he does a great job for the most part. But really, honestly, how many times can you have your wife sit there and say, when he asks me how I'm doing, I say, "Oh, I'm not feeling well today." That is literally my answer every single time he asks me. Or my other answer is, "I'm exhausted," or "I'm in a lot of pain." Those are my stock answers. Do I ever get to say to him that I'm doing good and that I'm feeling great? No, I don't. So, you know what? I'm personally surprised that Mr. Radio hasn't stopped listening to me. Every single time I tell him that, he takes the time to ask, like, the particulars and if there's any way he can be of comfort and help for me. And, you know, it's just amazing to have that support. At the same time, he literally has no comprehension of what I'm going through. And maybe you don't either. And for that, I am so grateful. For those of you who are like me, who are struggling with that, I really invite you to be bold and to reach out to someone who can be a partner in pain. Not so that we can sit there and complain to each other, but that we could be of support and be a great coping skill for each other. So, that, my friends, is my long rant around medical issues. But on the flip side, I have a new fridge. Well, my friends, our time together for this episode has come to a close. Thank you so much for joining me as I explore ways to be more, have more fun, be a little bit more organized in regards to spring cleaning. And I'm having a lot of fun with my creative endeavors. And I'm so grateful for you, my listeners, for all that you are, all that you do. I'm so grateful for the friendships that have developed from this podcast. So remember, my friends, to knit what you love and love what you knit. Ta-ta for now.